did you say?
9.
Just hold on a second.
Now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Hall.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Listening to Brain Damage here on WUSB in Stony Brook, where it's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock and 0 degrees. That's 32 on the Fahrenheit scale. We have hit the freezing mark at long last, and winter is upon us. Our forecast tonight calls for cloudy and cold conditions with a 40% chance of light snow or flurries. Low will be around 20. And Sunday, windy and very cold with partly sunny skies, high only in the 20s. Northwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour and getting gusty. Sunday night. You don't want to hear about Sunday night. You really want to hear about Sunday night? Okay. Bitterly cold. That's right. Sunday night, bitterly cold with clear skies. Low 10 above. This is great. Winter's hitting us really early this time. Usually we don't get significant snowfalls till after the beginning of the year, but I have a feeling this is the year. Monday, sunny and very cold with highs only in the mid-20s. Again, 0 degrees Celsius 32 on the Fahrenheit scale. 9 minutes after 10 o'clock, Eric Corley with you up until midnight. And we have kind of a special program this week because of all the historical things that have happened over the past few days, specifically the visit of the Soviet leader to New York City this past Wednesday and Thursday. Was it Wednesday and Thursday? I believe so. Of course, cut short because of the earthquake. What we're going to play for you is an excerpt. I went into the city and actually walked around and saw various things that I wanted to share. However, I have to apologize for the condition of the tape. Actually, I walked around with a little portable tape recorder, and the sound doesn't sound too bad. You get the sort of feeling of the city. But, well, as in all great organizations, bureaucracy tends to sometimes take over, and here at USB that is no exception. I came in here tonight with the express intention of getting these pieces all nicely edited up so that they would sound, you know, interesting, and it wouldn't be lots of space. Well, it wasn't to be. I came in and someone had not put out all the tape that you need to piece things together. It's called splicing tape, a special kind of tape that you need to piece together recording tape. And I spent a good half hour hunting that down, and I never found it. Then I decided, well, maybe it's in this special room down the hall, so I went to get the keys to that room, and lo and behold, the keys to that room also were mysteriously gone, so I had to track someone down that had the keys to that room, and then I like tackled them and took their keys and ran up to the room to look for the tape. But once I got into the room that was hard to get into to look for the tape, I found that there wasn't any tape in there either. But there was hope. There was another room that might have tape in it. Everyone says there's plenty of tape in there, but I couldn't get into there because that one has a combination lock, and there's nobody that knows the combination to it. So what that boils down to for you, our listeners, is that you will be hearing a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have actually wanted to put on the air because there really isn't much going on. It's just like a lot of ambience noise. I was able to cut bits of it out. I had to use Scotch tape, and I've never used Scotch tape to edit tape before. So it's very exciting. The tape could break in the middle, you know, and you could hear all kinds of technical foul-ups. Anarchy is just around the corner here. They say it could happen any day. Well, this might be the night. So, my apologies for any extra ambience that you hear. I tried to keep it down, but for the most part, what you'll hear is me walking around in Times Square and the sounds of the crowds expecting Gorbachev to go down the street in his limousine. And after that, we will come back, take your phone calls, and do all kinds of other fun things. In fact, we are going to be, during some of that ambience, we're going to look at today's news, so it's not a total loss. It's 12 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage, and let's go right into Times Square. We're here in the heart of Times Square, where the Gorbachevs are about to come down the block. Well, at least that's what everyone here assumes. They're going to come down the block. No one really knows where they are. I am, even as I'm speaking into this tape recorder, listening to the radio, and they're saying that they're still down at the World Trade Center. They're going to be coming up Broadway. We will attempt to find out what the situation is as far as their current status. We'll just walk around, talk to some police folk, talk to some regular people, and see if we can get a idea of what's going on. When you need to get places in New York, lots of times the best way is to cut through the subway. And that's what I'm going to attempt now. Oh, that's a shame. I picked the one entrance that you can't get anywhere else from. Oh, well. Have to go back up.
Hey, square is almost completely blocked. No cars coming through here at all in the middle of rush hour. Just a sea of police and onlookers. Sometimes in situations like this, you make invalid assumptions, and the assumption I just made was that they weren't allowing people to go down the block. And there I was, lining up to show the police officers my press pass, and I didn't even need to. I could have just walked down the street to start with. Now, there's a whole mob of people in Times Square. Now, as I'm walking down towards 41st Street on Broadway, there's really nobody here. Well, I mean, not nobody, just a regular rush hour crowd. I should say I'm walking down the bicycle lane. I guess it isn't the safest thing to do. But bicycles rarely seem to ride in this lane anyway. I'll shut up now for a while to let the sounds of the city captivate you. Currently 4:41 in the afternoon on Wednesday, December 7th, 1988. And that's pretty incredible because I'm listening to the radio at the same time that I'm speaking. And just as I said, December 7th, 1988, Dan Rather came on the radio with his reminiscent voice all filled with nostalgia and said December 7th, 1988, the exact same moment I did. Makes you feel like you're all part of one big family, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. Don't kid yourself. Up ahead is Macy's. You can see the giant lit tree or whatever that thing is that crawls up the side of the building. Looks like a tree. It's not really a tree. It's just a whole bunch of light bulbs. There's a man ahead of me with his fist pointed in the air. Looks kind of like the Statue of Liberty, except he's very fat. Oh, he's hailing a cab. I get it. He looked very perplexed. The great thing about New York City is everything is so close together. Millions of people living here. Why, think about it. Just as all this is going on, Woody Allen is probably having dinner uptown someplace. Yoko Ono's around here someplace. Everyone's in New York. There's a crazy man walking down Broadway talking to himself. All kinds of bizarre, marvelous things are happening both above ground and below ground. Now, I'm not even sure that the Gorbys are, in fact, at Macy's. I just suspect that they might be, because that is what I had heard before. I did see Raisa, I'm sorry if I didn't pronounce that correctly, Raisa Gorbachev leaving the Estee Lauder place in the GM building only a little while ago. She kind of went over to where we were in the press press pool. It looked like she wanted to say something to us, but of course she doesn't know the language and we don't know her language, so we just kind of smiled at each other, and then she was off into her limousine, met by a round of applause from the onlooking crowd, which had grown quite a bit. This always a crowd waiting to gather, no matter what part of New York you're in. I'm sure there was a crowd down at World Trade Center, which is where they came from, and or where they're coming from. I'm not quite sure where they are. No one really seems to know. I might add, this is the first time since 1960. And a good way to remember that, just think, the first time in the history of the New York Mets that a Soviet leader has visited New York. Bit of trivia for you, but important trivia nonetheless. We are now on 37th Street, or passing 37th Street, still on Broadway, which actually I'm a bit of a fool for walking in the bicycle lane. I can walk down the street. There's no cars coming down here. Just walk down the middle of the street and see just what transpires. There is a crowd ahead, but of course that could just be the regular Macy's Christmas holiday season crowd. Oops. I was wrong. There is a UPS truck barreling down Broadway, so I shouldn't walk down the middle of the street. An amusing anecdote to take up these last couple of blocks. Coming into the city, as usual, I was completely unprepared to cover this story or walk around with a tape recorder. I didn't have a tape recorder. I didn't have a radio. So I ran into a discount electronics store armed only with a Visa card to buy just those things. Tape recorder, a radio, batteries for both, and a cassette. Of course, I had to wait on about three or four different lines to do this. You have to do that upstairs. You have to buy this first, get it at the counter, all that kind of thing. And it took a lot longer than I had hoped. Then I got out into the street, and I had to open up all these packages. And I don't know if you've bought anything electronic recently, but they package it like it's nobody's business. It took me a good 10 minutes just to open the package. And then after all of that, installing the battery, it didn't work. Of course, I had installed the batteries backwards. I didn't know. Very frustrated individual I was. Now, I have arrived at Macy's, and I don't quite know what's going on here. It doesn't look like anything's going on here. Oh, dear. I just saw a huge limousine, but I guess that wasn't theirs. Just came up to me and asked me if I was Jewish. Whenever anyone asks you anything in New York, always say no. It worked this time. He just smiled, said, "What a relief," and left.
And as we listen to the sounds of New York at the holiday season, let's also take a look at what's going on in the world tonight. Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev, which is the reason for this madness on the air right now, he visited the earthquake-ravaged Republic of Armenia today, where he consoled survivors and pledged that all efforts will be made to help them. The TASS news agency quotes Gorbachev as telling the quake victims that the entire country shares their sorrow. The Soviet government estimates that between 40 and 45,000 people died in Wednesday's quake. 26 American disaster relief specialists left for Armenia early today with 8 dogs trained to sniff out survivors buried in rubble. The flight is part of the biggest U.S. relief effort in the Soviet Union since World War II. Americans provided limited help after the explosion at the Chernobyl nuclear reactor in 1986. But apart from that, this is the first time we have provided such help to the Soviets since World War II. We will be discussing, after all of this ends, U.S.-Soviet relations and if they're improving and where they're going. And you're invited to call us up at 632-6901 to express your opinions. That's after we continue with this tape recording of the activities in New York this past Wednesday. After a 24-hour delay caused by weather and technical glitches, the European Ariane 4 rocket blasted off today from French Guiana in South America. The Ariane 4 deployed 2 satellites. One will broadcast TV directly to European homes. The other will be used for British military communications. More Operation Rescue protests against abortion. Police arrested almost 400 demonstrators outside two Planned Parenthood clinics in Northern California. Police in Austin, Texas arrested 85 people outside a clinic where abortions are performed. And in Columbus, Ohio, 52 protesters were arrested as they attempted to barricade the entrance to a clinic. And finally, former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos remains hospitalized in Honolulu after suffering what his aides say was congestive heart failure. The 71-year-old Marcos is reported in stable condition. Doctors have refused to release any information beyond saying Marcos did not suffer a heart attack, did not require surgery. Let's go back to the street.
Now leaving the World Trade Center, their motorcade is pulled up right outside the World Trade Center. What they're going to be doing is heading up the FDR Drive, and then, this is what I have heard, possibly only heading down 42nd Street. No mention of Macy's, and it's not even definite they will be going down 42nd Street. I know they have 57th Street closed off as well, so it's really anyone's guess as to what will happen. We'll try to position ourselves in the best possible place in Times Square in case that's where he should come. The trick now is to get through the really thick crowd into the street, which is where someone like me should be, because I'm talking into a tape recorder. That makes me special somehow. I don't ask questions, I just do what I'm told. It's considerably thinner here at this particular part of the street. In fact, it's non-existent in a few feet. And I will attempt to enter the actual street now. There goes nothing. Where's the press entrance?
No idea.
Should I ask over there, maybe?
Try.
Okay, thanks. Excuse me. Is this a press entrance over here?
I just stand.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'll be happy with this. Three police cars just went by, and that's about it. I don't really think that was the beginning of anything. should note I'm on the street side of the police barricade, which is kind of a lead, I guess. But press people are never satisfied. We want to get right in the thick of things now. They appear to be blocking 42nd Street at the 7th Avenue access. Why, I do not know. Perhaps I really could not guess as to why they're blocking it here, because if Gorbachev comes down 42nd Street, he'll be blocked. Perhaps that's part of a subtle strategy by the New York City Police Department. I really don't know. What would happen if the police blocked Gorbachev and refused to let him go? It's a question that's no doubt on the minds of many people here, as police cars and motorcycles circle around and people stare at each other in bewilderment. In the spirit of further access, I'm going to attempt to get to the actual Times Square area. I'm reading the Newsday building. General Secretary Gorbachev at the crossroads of the world. I guess that means he's near Times Square. General Sec Gorbachev at... Oh, it's repeating itself. I don't know why it's doing that. This did not repeat itself when I was a kid. I'm going to attempt to get a little closer in case he comes around the corner and I should therefore miss him. Okay, I could either lose it or gain a lot here. I'm going to ask this guy. Excuse me, officer, is there press access past this point?
Nope.
Okay, so I should stay here?
Stay again.
Okay, thank you. Well, I guess I'm stuck here. Shouldn't really complain. Actually, I'm in the street. Everyone else is pressed up against buildings. Since 1960 has an occasion like this occurred, and of course it wasn't anything like it was now because it was 1960. That was 28 years ago, almost 30, when things were very different and almost always in black and white. President Kennedy was not assassinated yet. Nobody had ever gone into space. At least not in the conventional sense. The moon was off limits. As I mentioned before, the Mets had never won a World Series because they had not, in fact, even played a game yet. Uh-oh. An ominous sign. The motorcade is passing us on the block next to us. So it's coming down Broadway, which means I'm in the wrong place. A couple of fire trucks advancing behind us. Big fire trucks and then a couple of big firemen walking down the street. I don't know why. Gorbachev is said to have a fiery tongue, but this is ridiculous. I'm sorry. If I could just get across the street and down the block a little bit, I'd be in good position. What to do? If I try to cross the street, they'll get angry at me and yell at me. In fact, they just gestured for me to get back in. I wish I was in another part of this road here, because I hear cheers. Let's see what happens. Unmarked cars with lights flashing on top of them. Kojak cars, I call them. If there was a way for me to get someplace else, I would, but there really isn't at this point. I can just hope to see a car going by. Definitely coming downtown. Whether it's wind outside with the Broadway, we can't tell at this point. Hear sirens, murmurs of expectation. Limousines. I don't know if I saw him or not. I definitely saw somebody waving. And everyone's looking at each other now. Yes, that's it. It's all over. They're going down 42nd Street. No one quite knows why or where. Ambulance bringing up the rear of the motorcade. That's more motorcycles, police vans. It's an incredible sight looking all the way down 42nd Street and seeing it completely clear except for flashing lights. No people, no cars, except for police cars. If they let us through here, I will attempt that. They are letting people in now. And 42nd Street is open again. Mayhem. That's what it is, mayhem. People all over the place, all over the street. Nothing like world peace, eh? I've never seen a scene like this before. People walking in literally every direction imaginable on 42nd Street. Just complete crowds, everyone going on their way. Police, civilians, soldiers, paratroopers, you name it, they're all here. I'll continue walking down the middle of 42nd Street in rush hour for as long as they have it closed to traffic. Once traffic resumes coming down here, I will, of course, stop doing that. Walking straight down the yellow line here.
And I guess that's about enough of that, isn't it? Yes. That was the scene this past week in New York City on one of those days that us New Yorkers simply love, where the whole city goes kind of temporarily crazy, but somehow everything kind of holds together. We don't know how it happens. On July 4th, 1986, millions and millions and millions of people jammed New York City, and everybody was in a good mood. Pretty much the same thing this past week when Mikhail Gorbachev was in town. Created gridlock left and right, and didn't really annoy anybody all that badly because, after all, it was a momentous occasion. Who would have thought, 8 years ago when Reagan first got into office, that things would actually reach this stage where not only would he stop calling them the evil empire, he would actually begin to think of the Soviets as friends. And tonight, I would say a good number of Americans have started to think of the Soviet Union as a friendly nation. Certainly the visit of Mikhail Gorbachev has done much to advance that thought. And on a tragic front, I would say this week's earthquake that cut Gorbachev's visit short also has done much to promote the togetherness. Sometimes it takes a tremendous crisis, such as a horrible natural event, or even a horrible man-made event. And that kind of thing has brought people together as we all try to help out. We'll be giving out some information if you want to help aid the people in Armenia. Now estimated that between 50 and 100,000 people died in that earthquake. That is simply incomprehensible to me, how that many people could have perished in one single event, which couldn't have taken any longer than a couple of minutes. Earthquakes usually just last a few seconds, and then it's all over. It's the aftermath you have to deal with. Actually, in 1976, I believe close to a million people died in an earthquake in China, which simply baffles me. You know, things like that can happen. It's amazing. I mean, entire wars are fought, and nowhere near that number of people die in just a few seconds. All that can happen. So we'll be going into that a little bit more. We'll be taking your phone calls, 632-6901. Do you think U.S.-Soviet relations are improving? Do you think it's going to last? And what can we, as mere citizens of one of these countries, do to see that we don't go back into the madness that once threatened to envelop us? We're going to be hearing tonight's news from Radio Moscow, and you'll hear a couple of things that I would have certainly thought unusual as recent as a few months ago in the way they report things, and we can talk about that. And as I said, we'll be giving out the information for earthquake assistance, and we'll be taking your phone calls at 632-6901.
The autonomous Komi Republic, which is part of the Russian Federation, is situated in the far northwest of Europe and spreads up to the Arctic part of the Ural Mountains. It's crossed by 9 northern parallels. 10 fair-sized European states could be placed on its territory. Besides indigenous residents, that is, the Komi people, there are also Russians, Ukrainians, Nenets, Chuvashis, and Tatars. And now, let's go back into history a little bit. A boy lying on skins behind our backs was turning the knobs of a small transistor radio. And the tent was suddenly filled with an announcer's voice speaking Komi. Then with music from Moscow, followed by English and French speech.
The recording was made at the Moscow Theater of Musical Miniatures.
Now, back to modern times.
Your attention, please. At the recommendation of the International Time Bureau, commencing at 23 hours, 59 minutes, 60 seconds UTC, an extra second will be inserted into the NBS time scale. This adjustment is required to maintain internationally coordinated universal time as broadcast from these stations in close agreement with UT1 or astronomical time.
WA6ODB with a question.
And,
You know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
And about power. We got so much power now.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
We got so much power now. That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
Power and all that. That's power. We got so much power. That's ridiculous.
We have
power, 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 power now. Ridiculous. We got so much power now.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
It's not even funny. That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many?
It's not even funny.
That's
ridiculous.
Do you know how many?
That's ridiculous.
Do you know how many times?
That's ridiculous. It's not even funny. It's not even funny. It's not even funny.
Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
It's not even funny. How many time zones?
Yeah. We have four in this country, right?
How many time zones?
Yeah.
Hello? 1, 2, 3.
Four in this country, right?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
4. 1, 2, 3. Yes, sir.
Right?
1, 2, 3. Yes, sir. Uh-huh. 4 time zones?
Yeah. We have 4 in this country, right?
No, sir.
We have...
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
And,
Do you know how many time zones they have?
Yes, sir. 4. No, sir. I never really studied that up.
11.
11. It's not even funny.
The 11.
11. That's ridiculous.
The 11.
11. Well, that's what we can do. We can go anywhere because we live here. We can go anywhere else.
But not only the right of free travel, I'm saying the 11.
11. 1, 2, 3. Yes, sir.
The 11.
11.
That's how big they are.
Yeah. 11.
That's how big they are.
Yeah. I can believe that. I'm a firm believer in that.
You're right.
1, 2, 3. 4. Yes, sir. 1, 2, 3. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. The Soviet Union's the whole half side of the world.
Yeah.
And we're just on a little, one little tenth of the globe.
Yeah.
When you talk about fighting, we're a country that we're a firm believer on Christ, and it's called help thy neighbor. Do not kill, do not, you know, steal, cheat, lie from everybody. That's why we have to have computers, because man, nobody is perfect, you know. It's not even funny. And about power, man, nobody is perfect, you know.
So what is your point?
Nobody is perfect, you know.
So what is your point?
There's two things they'll talk about. One's politics, the other one's religion.
Thanks for the good thoughts.
This concludes our transmission to Oceania. However, listeners in East Asia may continue listening on the following shortwave frequencies. 6110, 7230, 9565, 9760, 15160, and 15425 kilohertz.
Here it comes.
It's estimated that this week's earthquake in Soviet Armenia may have killed up to 50,000 people. The American Red Cross and the Armenian General Benevolent Union have set up 800 numbers for those interested in helping. They are 800-453-9000 and 800-282-9877. If those numbers are busy, you can call area code 202-737-8300. Or you can send a check to the American Red Cross, 150 Amsterdam Avenue, New York, New York, 10023, and write, Attention, Soviet Armenian Earthquake Relief. Those 800 numbers once again, 800-453-9000 and 800-282-9877. If they're busy, you can call 202-737-8300.
Radio Moscow, and here is the news. First, the headlines. President Gorbachev, who visited the disaster-hit area of Armenia in the wake of a devastating earthquake, has said everything will be done to give the relief aid needed. Israeli reprisal units are reported to have shot and killed two more Palestinians in the occupied Gaza Strip. Police in the Paraguayan capital have attacked a human rights demonstration. Those were the headlines. Now the news in detail. Mikhail Gorbachev has visited the earthquake disaster area in Armenia. Early estimates say 40 to 45,000 people died in the disaster. Tens of thousands of others were injured. Mikhail Gorbachev and other members of the Communist Party's Politburo visited the city of Leninakan, where they inquired into the progress of rescue work and measures to set up life support systems. In the area of that city, the earthquake measured more than 10 points on the Richter scale. Thousands of people have been removing ruins. Army units are involved in the work, and medical assistance is available to all who need it. When Mikhail Gorbachev came up to one of the ruined buildings, he was surrounded by a large crowd. The Soviet leader told the people that the entire nation shared their grief. Everything will be done to give all necessary assistance. The main goal now is to save everybody who can be saved, he said. Children and women must be evacuated and granted appropriate accommodation as soon as possible. During another stop in Leninakan, Mikhail Gorbachev and other leaders told the people what was being done to render emergency aid. On Saturday alone, a total of 80 planes with various relief cargoes arrived. Cargo planes with relief aid sent by the governments of many countries and by international organizations continue to arrive. Highways and railroads have mostly been restored, and measures are being taken to supply the victims with food, medicine, clothes, and temporary shelters, and to restore water and power supply. Mikhail Gorbachev, who was approached by a member of the French rescue team, thanked all who had arrived in Armenia to repair the damage caused by the disaster. Later in the day, Mikhail Gorbachev arrived in Yerevan, where he held a working conference to discuss the necessary aid measures. He said the main concerns now were how to save people and restore the ruined cities. The loss is heavy, Mikhail Gorbachev said, but all Soviet republics will pool their efforts to do everything to support Armenia. Flags have been flown at half-mast over the Kremlin in Moscow and elsewhere in the country as the Soviet Union held a day of national mourning in the wake of the devastating earthquake in Armenia. The workforce and factories in Azerbaijan, Moldavia, Belarusia, Uzbekistan, and other constituent republics turned out at workplaces for a full day's job and donated all of the day's earnings to the earthquake victims in Armenia. Gas industry workers remitted more than 12 million rubles, and half a million came from shop floor and office workers of an automobile factory in the city of Ulyanovsk. An estimated 25,000 rubles was donated by a large bread-baking plant in Baku. Construction equipment plants in Leningrad have shipped all their products to the disaster-stricken towns of Armenia. Mourning rallies or a minute silence were held at workplaces in memory of the dead victims. Russian Orthodox and Catholic churches in different cities are said to have held mourning prayers. And 1 million rubles was donated by the Russian Orthodox Church to the National Relief Fund to help the victims. Many countries have reacted to the misfortunes of the Soviet Southern Republic of Armenia as that of their own. Soviet embassies and consulates are responding to continuous phone calls. People are expressing sympathy and offering financial, medical, and other assistance. In Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, money-raising campaigns are underway. Banks have opened special relief aid accounts. The Bulgarian Red Cross has sent in the first plane with 18 tons of medicine and food. Another plane with aid will be sent on the 13th. A plane with aid has been sent by Cuba. The government of Yugoslavia has decided to send relief aid. The Yugoslav Red Cross has rushed to Armenia a cargo of medical equipment and medicines. A plane with 57 rescue workers and dogs trained to search for people buried in ruins, and also other essential goods, is on its way from the United States. A group of American doctors is about to leave for Armenia. It is led by Robert Gale, who took part in the treatment of the victims of the Chernobyl nuclear power disaster in 1986. The Danish government has sent 2 million kroner in aid to the victims. Offers of aid, including rescue workers and supplies of essentials, have been received from the governments of South Korea and Turkey. Relief aid is arriving from federal Germany, Norway, Switzerland, Britain, India, Poland, Greece, Finland, and other countries. A team of Soviet experts from the Geophysics Institute in Moscow are expected to monitor the earthquake center in Armenia. Professor Shabalin, the Institute's leading expert, said prior to his departure to Armenia that the team is to analyze the seismic situation in the area and to plan forecast the development of tectonic processes at a depth of 20 to 30 kilometers below the surface. He warned about the need for higher vigilance during what he described as an interval. At the same time, Professor Chevalin said there were no reasons for expecting stronger shocks in the epicenter, but weaker tremors were not ruled out. The General Secretary of the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia, Miloš Jakeš, has voiced full support for the Soviet initiatives announced by Mikhail Gorbachev in his United Nations speech. Interviewed by the French daily Le Figaro, Miloš Jakeš said that the withdrawal of six tank divisions from the German Democratic Republic, Czechoslovakia, and Hungary, and other specific initiatives announced by the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Treaty, should not remain unnoticed. Mikhail Gorbachev's announcement that the Soviet Union will cut its armed forces by 500,000 and reduce considerably its conventional arms has drawn a favorable reaction from the United States Senator Rudy Boschwitz. In Peru, the Senate issued a special resolution in which it speaks highly of the Soviet proposals for disarmament and for tackling the developing country's foreign debt problem.
Well, as you heard the latest news from Radio Moscow, that was taped this evening on the earthquake and the various events of the week, with Mikhail Gorbachev visiting the United Nations and New York City. And no matter what your place in life, no matter what your interests, I don't see how anybody can deny the dramatic and far-reaching historical relevance that all of this kind of thing has. What I'd like to hear from our listeners is, what's next? What does the future hold? Is this going to last? Have we seen this kind of thing before? Where are U.S.-Soviet relations going, and how is that going to affect the citizens of the world? Our number is 632-6901. Our area code is 516. And walking around New York City on Wednesday, when Gorbachev was being driven all over the place and causing all that havoc, I remember hearing, as I was listening to the radio in my headphones, about the earthquake. It had just taken place that previous evening, I believe. And the reports at first said the estimates were 4 people in Turkey died. 4 people. And now they're saying could be as high as 100,000. It's incredible how things like this happen. And just try to imagine 100,000 people dying in the middle of the United States. A plane crashes and 40 people are killed, and it's a top story for 2 or 3 days. This is something that we have really no conception of, and I think it kind of ties into the way we feel with the rest of the world. We really don't have much of a conception of what true suffering is. I mean, we haven't had a war in this country in quite a while, as far as I can remember. We haven't had natural disasters to the extent of much of the rest of the world. So maybe by getting a little closer with the Soviets, we'll get a little closer to reality as far as the way people live their lives. Our number once again, 632-6901, and that's area code 516. Tell us what you think about what happened this past week and where it's all going. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, to tell you the truth, I'm kind of confused by the way the Russians have been acting lately.
Okay, what's confusing you?
Well, what I'm saying is, remember Lenin?
Yes.
Well, not personally, but anyway, what he said was, remember he said that communism was going to engulf the world, which includes the United States, because we are, you know, part of this world.
Right. Also, if you remember back to 1960 when Nikita Khrushchev said, "We will bury you," that's a remark that has been, I think, completely misinterpreted. It wasn't meant as a threat. It was meant as a prophecy, meaning that we will be around when you have ceased to be, and when you bury somebody, it doesn't mean that you kill them. It means that you're at their funeral.
Well, anyway, what I'm saying is, it's Lenin, who they call one of their best statesmen, and they have, you know, a big thing dedicated to him in Red Square, right, and with his body sitting there underneath a piece of glass. Anyway, what he said was pretty basically that the Soviet Union is going to take over the United States, not by starting a war with us, but being nice to us, pretending that they're our friends, and then just eventually just destroying us.
Well, now, do you think the Soviet Union is in any position to even think?
After we put our trust into them, then they turn around and, like, stab us in the back and...
Right, but how are they going to turn around and stab us in the back? We're still the most powerful country in the world. It's very hard for me to believe that they can just be nice to us, fool
exactly,
us,
you know,
and then...
don't happen instantly. I mean, and the Russians, you know, historically have always done the thing that usually works out the best, but it takes a long time. But it usually, you know, works. Except, well, most of the time, yeah. That's how they won their continent.
Uh-huh. But they haven't really held on to it all that successfully.
They've been playing a waiting game, pretty much.
Well, how long is this waiting game going to go on? 1,000 years?
Not 1,000 years. It might only take 50 years, 100 years, 150 years. But they would wait, and it's kind of it... So I'm not sure whether they're really being honest by this stuff, or whether they're just, you know, play along with them, and then...
I'll admit, it does seem like an awful lot of good things are happening. Gorbachev is making such far-reaching changes, but I think that he's a true revolutionary leader, and the changes he's making are to benefit his own people more than us, certainly, because their economy is failing, their whole system is totalitarian, and that has to be changed. And I think the country will be a lot healthier for it.
Yeah, they can't support their military right now because of their economy. It's in such bad shape. It's worse than it was before he came in and started glasnost and stuff like that.
Right. And how long can you have bread lines? You know, things have to change at some point.
I know. I'm saying it's worse now. They can't support their own military now because of all the problems they're having. I saw on TV that's estimated that something like between 50% and 80% of all Soviet grain rots before it gets to the people because of all the bureaucracy that they have.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the problems. And meanwhile, now what do they have? They have Astro Pizza in Moscow that they sell a slice of pizza for $16, which is a Soviet day's salary, pretty much. So the average Soviet citizen's daily salary, $16 for a slice of American pizza. And it doesn't rot before it gets to the people, you know, and they don't have to stand on 10 lines. You know, first they give the guy the money, then he gives them a coupon. Then they go to the second guy and he gives them, you know, the coupon and he makes it. Then they go to the third guy and he says, "Hold on." Then finally the fourth guy, he gives it to him and it's cold already.
Well, I mean, that just goes to show you that there's inequities.
The guy the money and the guy gives him the pizza on the plate and, you know, it's...
Right. Well, there's inequities between the two systems, and I don't know if that's, you know, the Russians have to catch up to us in order to be up to date with the fast food and everything. I think we have a lot of catching up to do as far as getting in tune with the rest of the world. I mean, the Russians, they know so much more about us than even we know about ourselves. They know the names of our states. Who can name all 15 Soviet republics? I know I can't. I mean, I can try. I can make a valiant attempt, but I don't think I'd do it. We aren't taught those things, and to be honest, most people just don't care. I think we have to start caring about these
things. They caught it, though, because they expected to invade us.
I don't think that's the reason. No, I think that's a very isolationist, suspicious way of looking at things.
But it's also the realist way of looking at things. It's not the utopian way of looking at things.
Well, I don't think the United States has a very realistic way of looking at many things. We are just interested in our own fast food culture, and the rest of the world really doesn't matter to us.
People emigrate and leave and come in whenever they want, except for PLO people. You know, and I mean, like in Russia, they let last year, they've actually been letting fewer and fewer Soviet Jews out than they have in past years.
Well, now, from what I understand, the United States has actually been putting limits on how many Soviet Jews make it into this country.
No, this is emigration to Israel or the United States total. Most Soviet Jews emigrate to Israel anyway. Only a very small percentage of them actually come here.
Well, overall, emigration from the Soviet Union has I believe, been relaxed quite a bit.
Well, no, they've let... At first they did, but then they clamped down again.
Uh-huh.
And they're letting fewer and fewer people out, because I'm friends with somebody who recently got out, you know, this past year. And it's much harder for them there now than it was in past years.
Uh-huh.
They're discriminated against more by people. They can't get jobs. This kid's father is a mathematician, right? He graduated from his college university he went to with high honors, right?
Yeah.
And he worked as in Russia. He slept floors in a supermarket. Because there were jobs he could have gotten, but they wouldn't let him have it. Why? Because he was Jewish and he tried to leave.
Well, now that's been a part of the Soviet history for decades now. That's been going on. But I think, you know, it's changing slowly, but I do think it is changing. And I do think that the Soviets are realizing their mistakes.
I still can't, you know, trust them completely because of...
Well, yeah, it would be foolish to just suddenly drop your suspicions if you are suspicious of them.
I'm not so sure, because, you know,
let me just ask a question. If you are still suspicious of the Soviets, what do you want? What do you want them to do? They seem to be giving us everything we've asked for.
I know, but it's all, you know, well and good, but what I'm saying is it's all come at once, and it's really sudden, and it kind of, you know, makes you think whether they're really serious about it, since it all happened, you know, all at once, within 1 week. He's come here and all these things have happened, and he made all these cuts and balances and things like that.
I'm convinced that the man generally wants peace and that wants to put an end to this nuclear madness, and I think most people in the world, American and Soviet and all other kinds of people, want that too, more than anything else.
You know, it's just kind of suspicious that they all this in 1 week, not, you know, like slowly, like yesterday, where, you know, change is actually happening. But
well, Gorbachev's been in power for over 2 years. He's been in power for quite a while now. So
but until now, he, you know, he's hid behind that big mark on his head, the Jew stain.
Well, I think we're making some kind of progress. I'd like to see what events will hold, and, you know, the idea, though, that it's all part of a big trick. Tell the Soviet people that. Obviously, they're being affected by all these changes too. Look at the ethnic rioting in Azerbaijan, Armenia, Estonia.
And the Soviets recently let a major network news crew into actually interview the people on the street, and they find it harder to get things and they wait online for hours to get you know, such really important things like toilet paper and soap, which is much harder to get now.
Uh-huh. All right, we're going to go to some more calls. Thanks very much for calling.
Yeah.
Our number is 632-6901. Give us a call. Let us know your opinions. Area code 516-632-6901. As horrible as it may sound, the earthquake in Armenia could be one of the best things that has happened to U.S.-Soviet relations, because the response in the United States has been so incredible. People just want to help out in any way. And, of course, this is the first time since World War II that the United States has given this kind of help to the Soviet Union. It's certainly an historical moment, something that is going to change the very way that we look at things. And just think about that. Think of how it's going to be not having the Soviets to kick around. What is it going to be like to have the Soviets as friends? Two superpowers that get along, that work together, send people into space together. Maybe find a cure for AIDS together. And stop spending billions, trillions of dollars on figuring out ways to wipe each other out. That's what can come out of this. It's certainly worth taking whatever chance cooperating with other people entails. Our number is 632-6901. Let's get those phone lines lit. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Good evening, Mr. Corley. This is Stiltskin.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good. Being the Yuletide season, you know, the season for giving, I was wondering if you could do me a favor. You could consider it, you know, a Christmas gift.
Well, what is it?
Let me take a call.
I'm afraid I can't do that. Technically, that's very hard to do on this state-of-the-art phone system we have.
Oh, come on.
On the old system, we just push down two buttons, but if I push down two buttons here, I'll disconnect you.
Come on, give it a try.
He asked for it. I tried to tell him. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Yes, hello. Am I on the air now?
Yes, you are.
Oh, you were speaking about human rights.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's very noble, and I think that we should all be concerned about human rights all over, including in our own country, when we have homeless people in midwinter on the streets, and this is something we should keep in mind. For example, there was a very important, actually two articles in the Christian Science Monitor on December 7th, 1988. It starts a series about massive fraud and abuse in our healthcare system. And this is something we should be looking into because human rights are being routinely violated in many nursing homes, in hospitals, such as Nassau County Medical Center has a bad record. They're about number one in Medicare deaths in the nation, for example, patients. And federal statistics indicate at least 22,000 unnecessary deaths, for example, among Medicare patients.
Well, now, can you just explain to me how does an unnecessary death take place with a Medicaid patient?
Well, for example, there can be patient abuse, for example, or gross criminal negligence. In fact, there are 80,000 Americans who die every year due to hospital infections. Many of these are caused by gross negligence on the part of staff. And some doctors will even tell you, or people who have studied this problem, don't go to the hospital because you could die there. You know, you can go in for one thing, for an operation, what have you, and die of something else, such as a hospital infection, which was due to gross negligence. So we have a very serious problem. Our human rights are being violated in that way because we are entitled to decent, competent health care. In addition to that, Senator Kennedy has stated that at least 37 million Americans, or 37 million Americans, including 11 million children, have no health care insurance. And yet, even with the insurance now, see, throwing money at something does not necessarily solve a problem. Sometimes it's like throwing gasoline, because this series of articles that I mentioned now at the Christian Science Monitor, which I think the public should take a look at to find out what's going on, mentions the massive fraud and abuse. Now, this includes unnecessary surgery. What could be more of a human rights violation to give a woman or a child a surgery that the physician knows, or the surgeon knows he or she does not need? It's just to make extra money. And if Medicare pays for it, or if insurance private pays for it, what good does that really do? So we have to monitor our healthcare system for abuse. No one's above the law, not even physicians, even if they wear white. We have to remember that everyone must be accountable, and we must ensure human rights. Now, I'm a patient rights activist and a human rights activist. I spoke up about abuses, for example, at Good Samaritan Hospital on Long Island before this Angel of Death came to light, and nothing was done about it. I spoke up about human rights violations.
Was it involving that particular person?
No. This was before he started working there.
I see.
Problem there. We have people there that I know about, for example, at that time, some a few years ago, and they may still be working there, that felt they were above the law. This includes nurses, technicians. We have people who are so arrogant in healthcare because they have their life in their hands, and some of them actually feel they can do anything they want. Because they're not adequately accountable, there's much that goes on that the public does not know about. There are many cover-ups, there are codes of silence. I was apparently, now I spoke about abuses at several kidney dialysis facilities, for example. Now, apparently, I've been suffering whistleblower retaliation, which is a serious threat to our freedom. For example, a worker at an upstate nuclear power plant complained about radioactive tools, and he lost his job. Apparently, that was whistleblower retaliation. Eventually, now in this particular case, he was reinstated, and this is in the Labor Department records, what have you. But we don't have a right anymore to speak up, and then we have to worry about union people or associations or individuals getting on our back because we're speaking up to try to correct an abuse in the system. We have trouble. We have a problem. And we do have a problem in our health care system, and I'm a patient now, outpatient, kidney dialysis at Booth Memorial Medical Center Satellite in Flushing, Queens, and I'm being medically mistreated, and I've caught them in the act, and they falsify my records. Something has to be done. We have to work on human rights in this country, from the homeless to the crisis in health care, which I also believe includes abortion. I believe that's a human rights violation. But even if you don't count abortion, which, by the way, is prohibited by the Hippocratic Oath expressly, but even if you don't count abortion as a human rights violation, we have human rights violations throughout the system, and the Christian Science Monitor series, which began December 7, 1988, and you can go to the library or what have you, or perhaps you can still buy a copy, check it out. I think the people out there should find out, because it's conservatively estimated that it's costing us, the lives is very important. The most important thing is costing us lives, the abuse, the unnecessary surgery, the falsification of records, drug-impaired people that shouldn't be working at this time. But it also costs us, conservatively estimated, $45 billion a year. We could use that money for the homeless and so forth. And just this idea, for instance, of universal health insurance will not do any good if they're going to double bill the insurance or if they're going to give unnecessary surgery. It has to be properly monitored, and these criminals must be held accountable, the ones who deliberately abuse and what have you, and the ones who are impaired. This situation must be corrected, and we must speak out about it, and we must go about correcting it. And that's what I have to say.
Now, let me ask you, are there particular organizations and groups that are doing things about this? And if so, can you give us their names, addresses, that kind of thing?
There are some groups, for example, there's one group called SHAME in Brooklyn, which has to do with hospital problems in hospitals and health care. There are a few, but they're not, they really can't. It's a massive problem, and we need more commitment on the part of the people. You can't be apathetic, eventually you yourself may be mistreated. But you see, what happens with a lot of people is they kind of ignore the situation, what have you, until it's a problem for them, and then it's too late.
And then they people don't listen to them. I know we are a society that you hear the news and you see TV programs, you see it through the eyes of the people in control all the time. You never see it through the eyes of someone, say, who's 80 years old. You don't know what they really feel like until you get to be 80 years old yourself.
Right, but yet it's reported.
And then you can't share that with anyone.
30 years, the crisis in nursing homes has been reported in the papers. In fact, recently now, and about 2 weeks ago or a week ago in Newsday, the results of a study on nursing homes, I think it was a 2-year study, and I think it showed like what they were able to gather was 40%, I believe it was, percent was bad or, needed improvement or what have you. And it may be much more than that, but in any case, even if it was 10%, that would be too much if there were problems in 10% of the nursing homes, for example. But it's not only nursing homes. A young person can go to the hospital and die from an unnecessary, for instance, from an avoidable hospital infection because simple sanitary procedure was not taken into account. Or, worse yet, and this is wrong and they should go to jail for this, a surgeon can give someone an unnecessary surgery and he knows it's not even necessary just to make the money. And I'm not saying everyone in healthcare is bad, but the thieves, liars, and murderers must be removed from the system, must be held accountable. We have to better monitor the system, and we have to monitor the investigators, too.
And if you're not a thief, liar, or murderer in the healthcare system, then you're probably one of the most powerful people around because you're in a good position to find those people that are doing these things and speak up.
There is whistleblower retaliation in healthcare.
Now, I know there is retaliation. Now, didn't Suffolk County just pass some kind of whistleblower law?
Yeah, but laws are if people do not enforce the law and if people do not adhere to it,
But it's a start, and it's a start. We have to do something with.
We have to recognize the problem. We mustn't consider someone who speaks up about bad doctors a piranha. See, we have still have a lot of people still have this idea. You're not supposed to speak bad about doctors. Look, if a doctor is doing the wrong thing, you should speak up about it.
Right.
You have every right to.
And I know that in the 1950s and periods before then, and even now to a degree, but not nearly as much as it used to be, that what the doctor said was the final word. You didn't question the doctor. Nobody questioned the doctor.
That's great. A lot of people, I think most people, in fact, particularly less educated people in a lot of cases, well, first of all, they don't really know enough and they don't have access to enough information. Now, recently, at your library, you could probably find the death rate lists for different hospitals. They were keeping that quiet. In other words, some hospitals for a certain surgery, you know, might be at 10% possibility of death, whereas another hospital might only be 4%. You have a right to know that. So as a consumer, you have to check. Now, these are only recently made available, and there are people, and also there's this thing that anyone, you know, and I find this on radio talk shows, for example, and I've been on a few, if you call in or what have you, and you start talking about medicine, you say, well, you know, there are problems, that it's as if it's this thing that sometimes even the host, well, you have to protect, you're not supposed to say bad things about doctors or hospitals, but if the hospital is performing a disservice and not delivering quality health care, or there's a fraudulent situation or human rights violations, you have every right to speak up about it, and you must get over some people. It's, you have to get over this thing. You're not trying to hurt good medicine or good health care. You're trying to improve it.
Right. And I think the people that are doing this kind of thing are doing the most to hurt good medical care. Definitely. You mentioned the homeless at the beginning of your call. Now, do you have any specific observations on an increase in the amount of homeless people? Or?
Well, there seems to be, and according to most observers, there seems to be an increase in homelessness in this country.
Why do you think that is?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. Some of the homeless do have mental problems, and in the 60s or 70s, I believe, we were releasing them from institutions, but we felt that they'd be able to integrate into the community, but that hasn't been working out. We have to change that. If they do need, we have to have shelters for people and decent shelters, because some of the homeless in New York City, for example, don't want to go to the shelters because they feel they're safer actually, you know, outside than in some of these shelters. So we really, you know, we have the money too to make these.
Oh, certainly, we have the money to do just about anything. You know,
we have, and also if we just cut down on the fraud in the defense spending fraud, for example, and in the healthcare fraud, for example, we would have plenty of money to address these problems. And we do have to be more concerned. And then with the holiday season, the Christmas season coming up, and there's Hanukkah and what have you. You know, we really have to be thinking about the less fortunate, and you know, even well-to-do people are at risk. For example, going to a hospital. For instance, the artist in New York, Warhol.
Yeah. Perfect example.
The nurse gave him extra saline or something, which apparently killed him. And that was either gross criminal negligence or what? Or I don't know what. And this has been done to me actually on kidney dialysis, where I was given excess saline, for example, at the end of the run. This could have caused a congestive heart attack. They would have, and usually something like that would just be written up as natural causes. And we have some bad people in healthcare, and a lot more. You know, this business about, well, a few rotten apples, that's a lot of garbage. So in some places, we have a whole bushel of rotten apples, and we have to do something about that. And
at the same time, with all of this this possibility for neglect and horrible things happening to you, how would you speak to someone that is about to enter a hospital and is feeling nervous enough about it already? But on top of
that, it's good if their family comes to visit them often, but also be careful. You know, look at the new information available at. About, for instance, if you have a specific surgery, first of all, you get the second and third opinions. You should be doing that.
Right, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's the first step before you go in. I mean, do you really have to go to the hospital? Do you really need, for instance, does the woman really need a cesarean? I mean, for thousands, millions of years, women were having babies without the cesarean. I mean, how many do? Maybe some small percentage do need the cesarean, but this has also been, it's common knowledge that at least among the healthcare field that, you know, a lot of this is unnecessary. In fact, some estimates by experts, one-third of all cesareans are unnecessary. And so there are other, so if you really don't need it, it would be a good idea not to, to take it and try to take good care of yourself, exercise or whatever. You
and
know,
even other
the natural approach. Try to avoid surgery, whatever.
Right. Even things that are considered very minor, like getting your tonsils taken out. If it's not necessary, why do it?
Right. Well, you know, there are hundreds of kids who die each year from having tonsils taken out.
Hundreds?
There are complications for even the anesthesia.
Oof.
The anesthetic can, you know, some people don't come out of that. So,
that's right.
You know, any
reaction.
Medical procedure or any medication, if you can do with that, if you don't, first of all, if you don't need it, you don't take it. In fact, there's one heart surgeon who wrote a book, I believe his name is Halpin from Mount Sinai. You know, he says, if it don't have to be fixed, don't fix it, you know, about the heart. You know, that there's a lot of unnecessary bypass surgery. So,
right.
You know, if you don't need it, don't get it done. This is something to keep in mind, because a lot of people feel, well, I'll get surgery or I'll take a pill. If you don't need it, or if there's another alternative. Now, we have a lot of new methods which don't have to perform surgery with a lot of these new methods where we can see inside the body and what have you. And it's also been demonstrated, too, that, you know, in a lot of cases there are medications or simply more healthful living which, you know, you may not need a surgery. You can go about it that way. So that's the first thing. Then if you're going to go to a hospital, if you find you really need the operation, check out the lists of the hospital death rates for certain operations. So there's a lot the public can do. The public must show more of an interest and must demand from their elected officials an end to the abuse in health care, and also that to really see that quality, competent, honest health care is available to all citizens.
Okay, you've raised a lot of very valid points and very important points. I would like to get back to what we were talking about before, though, mainly the U.S.-Soviet relations and how they are changing. Do you think that ties into this at all, or can tie into it?
Well, sure. You know, if we're going to go around just talking about the Soviets' human rights violations, you know, we do have to look to ourselves, too, and we have to do some justice here where there is injustice or where there's problems, and then we should constructively criticize others, too. But we must realize that we do have our human rights violations right here, and we should work on those, too. And I think we'd be respected more throughout the world if we did that.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Yes, human rights violations are not always political in nature. Sometimes it goes a lot deeper than that. So, caller brought up many good points. Whenever you see something going on, no matter what your position, your doctor, patient, a kid, speak up. Do something about it before it's too late or before you wind up being next. Our number is 632-6901. We're discussing, well, now we're discussing human rights violations, but mainly we're discussing I don't know if we can call it a summit. It wasn't really a summit this week. It was a meeting between Reagan, Bush, and Gorbachev, but it wasn't official in nature. It was more like a kind of a friendly meeting, and I think that's probably the best kind to have, because when you have these summits, they usually just get together for about 15-20 minutes per meeting, or even half an hour maybe at the most. What can you do in that kind of time frame, you know? And when it's more informal, you tend to develop a more lasting relationship, a more trusting way of communicating. So this visit could very well be the most important meeting between the superpowers. Let's at least hope so. We would like to hear your opinions on how this will affect us, how it will affect the rest of the world, what we should do as a country, as individuals, what the Soviets should do, should we trust the Soviets, and things like that. Our number is 632-6901, and I should say that I'm looking at the phones here. I'm very disappointed in their response. I mean, I expected USB listeners to really be interested in this kind of thing. I mean, look, folks, we're not talking about just, you know, economics or something. We're talking about something that could shape whether or not this ball called Earth blows up or not, you know? Because if the U.S. and the Soviets don't get along, someone eventually is going to do something irrational. And odds are someone eventually is going to do something irrational in some part of the world. And if the U.S. and the Soviets have their act together, and if the Chinese are being cool too, odds are it won't get out of hand. But if everybody's fighting with each other and turning their backs and not paying any attention and just, you know, being real imbeciles about it, we're not in very good shape. Now, for the first time this week, I feel like we're getting someplace. Both the way the city received Gorbachev, the way Gorbachev spoke in front of the UN, and the way the world is responding to the situation in Armenia, it just might be a big turnaround for us. I mean, we may all be getting fooled somehow, but I think there's hope here. I'd like to know what you think. 632-6901. That didn't bring in one call. I can't believe it. Area code 516-632-6901. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Yeah, I did.
Well, that's one opinion. 632-6901. Fortunately, he stayed on 20 minutes ringing the phone to say that. And we have no more calls. I can't believe it. 632-6901, area code 516. Well, in that case, I will give out a list of groups that are taking donations for the earthquake. There are quite a few here. So if you want to get a pen and pencil, if you're interested in donating some help to these people, up to 100,000 people may have died in the earthquake, so help is certainly needed. The Adventist Development and Relief International, located at 6840 Eastern Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20012. Wow. I guess it takes one moronic phone call to get everything lit up. We almost have a bingo here. We do have a bingo. Well, USB listeners, you know, it takes somebody to, like, hit you in the face, and then they all come and back you up. That makes me feel good. I'm proud to be speaking to these people here. Let's go back to the phones. Good evening. You're on brain damage. Hello? Well, I guess your silence indicates that you show support for us and you're just there for us. You don't have to say anything. Just be there. That's fine with me. Good evening. You're on brain damage. Ha! Got him. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Eric.
Yo.
Yeah, what you said before about if you see something happening like that, bring it up. Don't just let it sit there because it'll come to you next. When you just everybody, I know this from experience. Trust me. If you bring it up, don't tell the person that's doing the thing wrong because you'll end up just getting in trouble and then you won't be able to tell anyone about it because then they'll get you in even more trouble. What you got to do is you have to tell all the other people who don't know about it yet. Then the other person will have to do something about it because everybody else will know about it.
Whatever your method, just make sure it gets known.
I'm just saying, don't tell the person that's doing the thing that you think is wrong, because then he'll end up blackmailing you or something not nice. Believe me, this has happened before.
Well, it depends on the situation, obviously. There's different rules for different circumstances, but...
even a very important...
I don't think there's any excuse for keeping quiet about, you know, a situation that is violating something.
But the more
that you believe in.
The more people that know about it, the better, and then the person will have to say something, otherwise it'll look like a complete moron.
Well, yes, publicity is probably the best tool. And if something like what is happening to our last caller is happening to you, getting publicity is probably the best thing to do.
The one who called you Richard?
No, not that one. The one that was complaining about all the health violations and murderers in the hospital and that kind of thing. So, yes. Good points. Thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on brain damage.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to talk about the earthquake.
Go ahead.
Of course, it was a great tragedy. But just a couple of weeks ago, I think there was as much as 50,000 people killed in the cyclone in Bangladesh.
I didn't even hear about that.
Yeah, well, this is true. Probably even more people in... Probably over 100,000 left homeless there.
One cyclone did that?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. But it does keep in line with what I said before about us being completely oblivious to what the rest of the world is going through.
And maybe if this earthquake didn't happen at the time when Gorbachev was here.
Yeah, what timing. What incredible timing.
I've gotten the press or something. I don't know.
I think it would have, because the Soviet Union is a little bit different than a third world country.
Yeah, well, that shouldn't really be. I mean, people...
No, it shouldn't. It's not fair. I mean, it should get the same amount of publicity if it happens in Chicago or if it happens in you know, India somewhere.
Exactly.
But the way things are set up now, it obviously won't.
Yeah, this didn't get a lot of headlines. This was, like, buried in the, brief roundup of world events.
That's incredible. Those are 50,000 individual people that are very much like the people that you know, except that 50,000 of them. That's really hard to believe.
Yeah.
Now, I don't suppose you have any list of organizations taking aid for. I guess the Red Cross would probably be the best organization.
Like international relief agencies. Like what's the one in England? Is
There's Red Cross, Red Crescent. There's UNICEF. There's all kinds of groups around, and things through the UN, of course. So, any thoughts though on the U.S.-Soviet business?
Well, we have to keep talking. We have to keep. We just can't. Like the recent call said, it was kind of a very big distrust.
Uh huh. How do you feel? Do you think we should trust them? Not sure, huh?
Have to.
What's that?
Have to.
You mean the alternatives just are not acceptable?
No.
I see. Well, do you personally feel that that Gorbachev is on the level? Uh-huh. Well, they're gone. I guess some questions are best left unanswered. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Yeah.
Am I on delay tonight?
No, you're not.
I'm only rolling a radio. I always go through this ritual every week, you know?
Which ritual is that?
Lowering the radio and asking you if we're on delay.
Ah, and we sound kind of hollow tonight, so...
You sound hollow?
Well, it's because you have reverberation from the radio.
I do?
You do, yes.
Might be the intercom phone.
No, it's an intercom effect. Well, are you on an intercom phone?
Yeah.
A speaker phone?
Yeah.
Well, please pick up your headset for the benefit of our listeners.
Okay, wait a minute. I got to do this methodically now. Hang on.
More people are speaking on speakerphones recently, and...
Okay, is it working?
It's working. Actually, you sound worse this way, but...
really?
Continue talking anyway.
Oh.
What kind of phone is that?
Cobra, it says on there.
A Cobra phone. Now, that's a scary kind of phone to have.
Now we're getting down to the old, good old Brain Damage talk that this show was... known for.
Now, what Brain Damage talk have we had in the last few minutes?
Unreally.
Uh-huh.
But I gotta tell you that I'm a Mr. Radio Groupie.
Oh, God.
Now, that is what we got... Now, that's what I look for... We need personalities like that on this program.
Well,
that's what this program is about.
Don't you think you're a personality?
Yeah, now me, Mr. Doomsayer. Now, that is real... That's a radio personality. I mean,
uh-huh.
I'm not, patting myself on the back, but, you know, this show is lacking personality. You know what I mean? Now, that guy, wait, I mean, come on. He knows what he's doing. He knows you know what I mean.
I think I know what you mean.
But I'm missing a lot of
But you
subject,
see, I'm afraid that it might backfire, and we're going to get him to call, you know, and
Come on, you're so sarcastic with him, and you know, come on. Come on, Eric.
Yeah, I do enjoy being sarcastic with people. That's certainly true.
Come on, you're a personality.
We have a news bulletin. It is snowing in Brooklyn.
It is?
Yes, that's the word. It is snowing in Brooklyn. It's -1 degree Celsius here, which, what does that translate to? 30 degrees Celsius.
My Corvette doesn't go good in the snow.
Oh, boy, snow. I can't believe it's snow before Christmas. It's amazing.
Yeah, but I wanted to say, what could I say?
You have such a pessimistic outlook on the entire human race. Don't the events of this week mean something positive?
I've got the name to uphold. I mean, you can't break down that barrier, otherwise I won't be the
About your name, forget about what you're supposed to represent. What do you as an individual think about what happened in New York this week and what's happening around the world now?
Well, you know, it, it I you're always rushing me to get the words out. I got to try and say this without. I always feel pressed for time.
We only have 21 minutes left, so we do have to race a little bit.
I want to give somebody else a chance, but let me see what I can say. Okay, today I talked to some people. I saw a demonstration against abortion. Okay.
Okay.
I wanted to talk to them. I always wanted to talk to these people, but I'll bypass all the things we said because it got down to the earthquake. I mentioned the earthquake because they started talking about God, and then I said, well, they said, well, it's in the Bible that this stuff is going to happen, and I says, well, look, these earthquakes have been going on long, long, long before the Bible was even written.
You know, you show me a book that says, you know, a particular year, earthquake in this part of the country, and I'll respect that book, but I'm not going to respect something that just gives vague prophecies that such and such is going to happen, that such and such, you know, a period in an eon or something like that. That's insane.
Well, fundamentalist Christian.
Right, you can't live your life based on that kind of thing.
Well, they did, but I tried to, you know, let them know that, you know, I feel, you know, it's a shame that this had to happen to the people, but, you know, it's just like when California goes under, I'm not going to feel sorry for anybody.
Uh-huh.
But they know that they're living on a fault line. It's no mystery. I mean, it's no mystery. Come on now. Am I supposed to feel sorry for these people when they all get killed? I mean, am I being cruel?
Well, I mean, maybe they don't realize the danger that they're in.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I know we don't realize the danger that they're in.
Come on.
We don't think about these things, and that's not just true of California. It's true of people that just go from day to day, and they don't fix the battery in the smoke detector because nothing's going to happen to them. You know, they don't wear their seatbelts because nothing's going to happen to them. And then something happens to them, and it's, oh, wow, why didn't I do this? It could have been so easy to avoid. You know, it's a syndrome that the entire human race goes through.
I've been saying it would be so easy to avoid the catastrophe that we're headed for now. I mean, the Earth is, you know...
But what I'm asking you is, with this cooperation, with this talking back and forth, aren't we at least moving forward?
Definitely. I think that Reagan has definitely done. It's been a major milestone. The things that he's done with Gorbachev. I think that, in my personal opinion, now I'm no authority on this, but I think that maybe the Soviets feel a little bit that their type of government might be archaic in the type of world that there is today. Their government just doesn't fit in, and they can't survive. And they're going to have to start opening up channels.
And they're the ones that have to realize that. I mean, it's pretty obvious to us, but until they realize it, they can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I'm not an authority. I mean, they can plainly see that the United States is helping them now in a time of need, you know?
Right, and I think that's going to do so much to aid the two countries.
Yeah, I know, but isn't it a shame that it takes a catastrophe like that to do that? You know, I mean, it's such a shame, but, I mean... But then again, you know, as the weeks go by...
Hold on. Someone thinks they are doing me a favor by picking up the phone. They are not doing me any favors by doing that. Don't pick up the phone, please. There are people on hold. They should not be on hold. I'm sorry to those people because they're now paying for the call. Please don't pick up the phone anymore, whoever you are. Continue with your dissertation or whatever you were saying, sir.
I'm not an authority. I really don't know. It's a shame that it takes a catastrophe like this to bring people closer together, but I think it'll just wear out like everything else does. It's a big front page thing now, and as the weeks go by, you'll see smaller and smaller articles until it's a little paragraph in the corner of Newsday somewhere, and it'll all be forgotten.
Well, it's up to us to make sure it isn't, and one of the ways is to help out.
Well, just like the guy said in Bangladesh and everything else, it's big news now, and then people get bored of it, and it's, you know.
Uh-huh.
It would be just like, I don't know, just like if we did make contact with extraterrestrials, with the equipment we have, the radio telescopes, it would be big front-page news, and then all of a sudden...
Well, I don't know about that. I think that would be with us for quite a while, because that would really change things. But then again, I could see it fading away, too, knowing our fast-paced culture.
I'll give somebody else a chance.
Yes, we're running out of time, so thanks for calling.
Yeah, sure, nice talking to you, Eric.
Okay, our number is 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Dick.
I can't speak it. That tone of voice just, like, doesn't appeal to me. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Not too bad. I guess I might as well express my views, too.
Well, yeah, as long as you're on the air.
Yeah, okay, well, I figured this. Hey, we've come a long way since the evil empire era of the Reagan administration.
Okay.
Starters, I mean, we are getting along with them, and this little visit by Gorbachev has done a heck of a lot to an extent. It's showing that they are being a lot more open, that they are that they are making an attempt also to try get, I mean, that they're making an attempt to get along.
Right. So, at least a part of their government is.
Exactly. But whether, I mean, we as a whole want to believe that they are getting, you know, that they are really trying, you know, it's hard to explain.
Uh-huh.
No, I mean, overall, Eric.
Uh-huh. Well, how do you feel about it? What are your feelings going into all of this?
Well,
do you think we're getting someplace?
Oh, it's hard. I mean, there's nothing major. I mean, we can talk to them now. That's how I see it right now. We can say hello to them. They can say hello to us. It's not like there's nothing like when it comes to nuclear arms or anything like that. They're still there. Overall.
True. But
it's
not impenetrable anymore. It's not something that can't be fixed. You know, when you have a conflict with somebody, the hardest time is when you're not communicating with them. Once you start communicating with them, you see how easy it is to talk over whatever it is that was bothering you and how easy it is to make concessions about what's bothering the other person. Same thing with superpowers, I think.
Yes. I mean, I'm not jumping for joy that he was here in New York. I mean, this is like when Reagan was there. I mean, it wasn't, I don't see it as anything spectacular.
Well, it was a fun event, you know. Just having him around was fun.
Yeah, that was just about it, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's good to see fun be spread to another place, to another culture. The two different countries were sharing in that moment.
That's true. I mean, I'm not trying to be, if I'm being pessimistic about this, maybe because I think I am, but...
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think Gorbachev is probably the best... Well, probably the best leader that Soviet Union has had.
Well, I can tell you this, 100 years from now, 500 years from now, he's going to be remembered as one hell of a revolutionary as far as shaking up the system.
With Gladenost and all, that's true.
Right.
I mean, he's done a lot, but, I mean, when it comes to, all I'm saying, though, is this. For the most part, if he just came to visit, said hello, and that was it. Earthquake happened, and... God forbid, I think that was unfortunate, but I mean, I just think that there's still a long way to go.
Oh, definitely, definitely. But at least now we seem to be moving.
Yeah, we are. But I mean, maybe I'm expecting too much. But yet, I mean, Russia. There's nothing bad. I think it's just. I think we're gonna have to. I think overall, like with Reagan, he's mellowed out a lot. He's really has mellowed out. I mean, but I think it's going to be more of up to us than up to them. If we stop playing like, all right, you know, if we just have more trust in them, like you've been saying, then, and a lot of people have been saying, then that's the key.
Right.
How can they, you know, really have any respect for us after, you know, calling Reagan them all these names and. You know,
right, and what is the equivalent? What have they called us? They haven't called us the evil empire or anything like that.
Oh, yeah, they've called us, you know, capitalists and all that.
Well, that's not an insult to most people I know. They haven't done anything to equate with us calling them the evil empire and a bunch of barbarians, which Reagan did. The only people that have really insulted us like that are maybe the Iranians. You know, they've called us the great Satan, but the Soviet Union has never done that.
But, I mean, I think overall it's just... I have a feeling that something will happen with it, you know, with Bush. But I mean, Bush is taking over now. Think about this: Bush is taking over. What's his views on relations with Gorbachev, with the Soviet Union? Is he going to continue with his policy? Bush, I think, will either like make or break, you know, the momentum.
That's true. Hopefully, he'll just keep it going. You know, that's all I ask for.
I mean, that's just about it. I mean, because also, I mean, most of the other people, you know, they express my ideas. So I'm like, ran out of ideas. I figured I'd call up anyways.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling.
All right, you're welcome.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, it's Bill Fox.
Hi, Bill Fox. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Bill Fox, I had a question for you before, but it's the kind of question you don't want to ask somebody on the air.
Oh.
So maybe you can call me after the show and I'll ask
you. I'll call you after the show.
Yeah.
Oh, and the invitation I invited you last week after last week's show, I invite you again.
Oh, it's still going on, huh?
Yeah, it's a weekly...
All right, Bill, when you throw a party, you just don't stop, do you?
Oh, I'll tell you another story after.
7 days and counting.
Oh, no, never mind. It's a long story.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, talking about human rights violations as far as medical issues are concerned, if we can still continue on that topic.
Okay.
excuse me. I don't know if you're familiar with the report done by Scientific American about 4 or 5 years ago concerning care in psychiatric institutions.
That is something that I know is extremely disturbing, the things that go on in psychiatric institutions. Even voluntary walk-in patients get abused to the extent that they wind up never leaving. I mean, we've all seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right.
Remember, Jack Nicholson was a voluntary walk-in patient. Wasn't he? Well, no, I'm sorry, he wasn't. He was committed, that's right, but the other people there were voluntary walk-in patients, and he was amazed at how they were so trapped and they couldn't just leave, even though they had the right to leave.
Right.
But now, what's your point?
Well, the point is that a lot of the things that went on in that report is far more profound than the kind of misdosage and kind of overdosage through negligence. This is almost deliberate. We deliberately, decided to write off the whole class of people, almost made it a caste of people marked mentally ill, and that we just don't do anything for them anymore. We just, you know, ignore them. And, for example, when people say, okay, psychiatric care patients don't do any better than mentally ill people without any treatment, that, you know, there's nothing over baseline. That's because people in mental institutions don't get any care. They just get, you know, drugged up to keep them, you know, mellow and such not, and that's it.
Uh-huh. Well, drugs are at the... at the root of it all, I think.
Yeah, I think you have a large misuse of drugs in psychiatry, and the report came out and people made a lot of noise about it. But when all was said and done, nothing was done. And I thought, you know, you get malpractice suits for medical type of issues, but nothing's ever done in psychiatry. Everybody's well, they're mentally ill. They don't count.
Well, that's a medical issue too. It should be treated the same way.
Well, this is of course. But
that's a particular instance where if it is indeed somebody that's not mentally competent, it has to be dealt with by other people that are concerned with that person.
Yeah, but this is something quite different than just writing the whole issue off as they're incorrigible. We don't want to deal with them, so let's not.
Uh huh.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. We have to get rid of the stigma.
It's quite worse. Yes, it's quite worse than patients for physical illness or injury, and it's quite worse than people in penal institutions.
Now, you know, if you have doubts about actually caring about somebody who's defined as mentally ill, or thinking that these people are worth any kind of attention. Think of how hard it would be for you, and I mean anybody, for you to prove that you're not crazy to someone who believes that you are.
And for most of us, that's more difficult.
It's impossible. I mean, find yourself in that horrible situation where just imagine you wake up one day and you're locked in a mental institution, and everybody thinks you're crazy, and you have to prove to them that you're not. Now, I'm not saying that these people that are in there are all not crazy, but there are some people that are certainly reachable and certainly can live normal lives.
As a matter of fact, part of that study was that after getting into the institution, they were deliberately displaying signs of paranoid schizophrenia. And immediately after getting into the institution, they would stop displaying those symptoms. and nobody would notice. Nobody would notice. People wouldn't dress like a woman would. A nurse there would fix her bra in the middle of a day room, and act as if there was nobody there.
Uh-huh.
And this is the kind of mentality that's being developed in psychiatric institutions. It's just not just state institutions or government ops, but even private institutions where estates are being paid a lot of money to basically treat these people as if they were dogs in a kennel.
So human rights are something that, as we said before, extend far beyond politics, and we have to look to ourselves. Bill, I'm going to go to a couple more calls. I want to ask you a question before you go.
Sure.
Is it snowing in Stony Brook?
Not when I came in. I came in about 20 minutes ago.
And it's not snowing. Does it look like it's going to?
Yeah. Again, you said it was snowing in Brooklyn.
Snowing
that's
in Brooklyn.
Good
that's,
side.
That's what I hear. It's snowing in Brooklyn. It's -1 Celsius here. And
Signs are right. We've been hearing reports that we should be getting snow soon. We were expecting snow this morning, but we didn't get any.
Uh-huh.
At least not that I know. Of course, I didn't get up till like around noon.
Oh, Bill. That's something. Well, thanks very much for calling us.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Our number is 632-6901. We have time for a couple more calls. I also want to go through a couple more of these groups that are taking donations for the earthquake victims. Have a pen or pencil. Get it ready now and write on something. Make sure you have ink. The American Friends Service Committee, 1501 Cherry Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 10102. American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee, 711 3rd Avenue, New York, New York, 10017. American Jewish World Service, 729 Boylston Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02116. American Red Cross, 431 18th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20006. American Red Cross in Greater New York, P.O. Box 4691, Grand Central Station, New York, New York, 10164, 0037, if you like 9 zips. AmeriCares Foundation, 161 Cherry Street, New Canaan, Connecticut, 06840. Armenian Assembly of America, 122 C Street Northwest, number 350, Washington, D.C., 20001. Armenian General Benevolent Union, 585 Saddle River Road, Saddlebrook, New Jersey, 07662. Armenian Missionary Association of America, 140 Forest Avenue, Paramus, New Jersey, 07652. Armenian Prelacy, 138 East 39th Street, New York, New York, 10016. Armenian Relief Fund, established by the Soviet Embassy, that's care of Riggs National Bank, account number 0408572564, and that's DuPont Circle Branch, 1913 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20036. There are more, and you can call up the radio station. They will be posted here if you need those addresses repeated. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, hey, Merry Christmas.
Thank you. You too. And Happy Hanukkah and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, so you guys still talking about Soviet-American relations?
That's that's the topic for tonight.
I was wondering, did they have a McDonald's in Red Square yet?
I think there's a McDonald's in the Soviet Union. But you know what bothers me, and I've said this many times, they're getting McDonald's, they're getting Pizza Hut, they're getting Burger King. What are we getting, you know? We're not getting Soviet things over here. I don't see any.
We get, like, ermine and sable furs from...
Well, I don't get any of those things.
Oh, no, but, you know, it comes in anyway.
Uh-huh. I'd like to see something, you know, a little bit more mainstream come out of there.
You know, like what, you know?
I don't know. They must have something.
VR?
I don't know. TV programs, maybe.
Yeah, TV programs? Can you speak Russian?
Well, no, but...
I hate subtitles, too. You ever watch a subtitled movie?
How about cartoons, music videos, you know? They have rock and roll, too, you know?
Yeah, but, you know, they're probably like 10 years behind us.
We don't know it, though. We don't hear it.
Yeah.
You know, we should judge these things. They're listening to our music.
Yeah, that's because English is, like, the best language for pop music, I think.
Well, French is pretty good, too, you know.
Lyrically, it goes, you know, it's just, like, suited best. You know, try to sing, you know, I want to hold your hand in Polish.
Ah, but they can do it in German.
Doesn't sound right. I got it on tape.
And also, I don't know if you saw, I forget the name of the film, but there was a Czechoslovakian version of Hey Jude.
Oh, was it?
Unbearable Lightness of Being, yes. And it sounded great. It was,
it was a movie, wasn't it?
It was in the movie, but it was a recording that I imagine was released at the time, and it was a female singer in Czechoslovakian doing Hey Jude. It sounded great to me.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that sounds interesting.
So, I don't know. There's all kinds of different interpretations of music, so I'd like to at least hear somebody try.
That sounds, you know, it's good that, you know, we get more access to the Russian people, you know, and see what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, their teenagers are just as into Pink Floyd as our teenagers are, you know, and more so because they haven't heard about it.
But,
they haven't seen as much of it as we have. They're not over deluged with it, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
I think we should be cautious, though, dealing with the Russians, because until they, you know, for them to really loosen up and, you know, have, you know, real significant reforms in human rights, they would have to do they'd have to go through a lot, you know.
Well, that's what they're going through now.
Because, you know, they are what's left of, you know, an old-style empire.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they do rule over countries like East Germany, Poland, that was, you know, nations before, you know, the Russians gain control of them.
Right now, though, those countries are actually resisting the Russian moves to
liberalize. They have been for a while, you know, but, you know, the fact that, you know, that the Russian troops are right there in the country still, you know, is a, you know, a powerful influence, not to go too far.
But think of it, what Gorbachev said this week, 500,000 troops withdrawn. No matter what we do, they're going to withdraw 500,000 troops. That's
good,
half a million.
You know, it's good that now we can really, you know, negotiate with them and maybe really get something done. But, you know, we do have to, you know, keep an open eye to what, you know, really going on.
Yeah.
Sure, that over there, you know, there's a lot of, you know, opposition to this man that we don't hear about because, you know, they have it's like a Byzantine court, you know, over there in a lot of ways. It's still like that.
I just hope he makes it to,
yes, you know, he's a very, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's trying to, you know, make his country stronger is what he's really trying to do.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there is room to cooperate with them, but, you know, we have to keep our guard up.
That's true.
Even though we should negotiate, you know, wherever we can, and, you know, if we can gain meaningful, you know, concessions or whatever, you know, things will really make the world safer, that's great, but definitely have to watch it, you know, because he could be out tomorrow, you know, that's the whole thing. We really don't know over here, you know, how strong his hold is over there. Because, you know, that doesn't get into the news, you know.
Well, I think we can play a part in strengthening that hold, you know, depending on how we react.
Yeah, true, but I think it's more of what he does inside Russia than anything we could do, you know. Yeah, I mean, yes, if things don't go really wrong for them in some
way. But if he were to fail in getting us to be on good terms with him, then it would be meaningless what he's doing. But if he succeeds in getting, you know, us one step closer towards world peace, then who can argue with that?
Then, you know, over there, there's a lot of, you know, entrenched powers in Russia that want things to stay the way they are, you know, like the communist bureaucracy.
Oh, true.
A lot of them, you know, would probably stand to lose their jobs or whatever.
Very true.
But he's trying to do, you know, because he's trying to cut the dead wood out of all that. And then the army is probably, you know, they're probably a very conservative lot over there. And they don't want to retreat and, you know, loosen control of what they have.
Well, we'll see what happens.
You know, suicide for them not to, because there's just no hope. But
the coming years,
shows, you know,
the coming
and,
months.
You know, empires, you know, will never recede unless they have to.
Well, sir, we have to go. We're running over again, so thanks very much for calling.
Yeah.
And program is Brain Damage. Talking about U.S.-Soviet relations and the progress that was made this week. Where it's all going to lead, we don't know yet. But changes are in order, changes are happening right now, and the only thing I have to say is I wish John Lennon was around to see it. 3 minutes after 12 o'clock, WUSB Stony Brook. Stay tuned for The Brothers. Eric Corley, I'll be back again next week. Good night. It's estimated that this week's earthquake in Soviet Armenia may have killed up to 50,000 people. The American Red Cross and the Armenian General Benevolent Union have set up 800 numbers for those interested in helping. They are 800-453-9000 and 800-282-9877. If those numbers are busy, you can call area code 202-737-8300. Or you can send a check to the American Red Cross, 150 Amsterdam Avenue, New York, New York, 10023, and write, Attention, Soviet Armenian Earthquake Relief. Those 800 numbers once again, 800-453-9000 and 800-282-9877. If they're busy, you can call 202-737-8300.
This is Kay Treacle, Greenpeace campaigner, with the Greenpeace Radio Report. During the winter growing season in Mexico's Culiacan Valley, agricultural fields stretching as far as the eye can see are sprayed almost daily with dangerous pesticides. While men, women, and children work among rows of tomatoes and cucumbers, crop dusters buzz the fields, dousing the unprotected workers and coating vegetables destined for U.S. supermarkets with chemicals. As a result, the farm workers of Culiacan are getting sick. Neurological disorders, liver disease, cancer, and sometimes death are the fruits of their labors in the fields. Some of the pesticides used in Culiacan are banned in the United States. Others are commonly used here but are often applied in Mexican fields by workers untrained in their application and unprotected from exposure. And the residues from these pesticides end up on our dinner tables. A 1983 report by the U.S. General Accounting Office found that nearly one-third of Mexican produce entering the U.S. contained illegal pesticides residues. The problem of pesticides is not limited to Mexico. In fact, about 70% of all pesticides used in third world countries are sprayed on crops grown for export to developed nations. Greenpeace is urging the U.S. government to prohibit the export of banned pesticides. We are calling on third world governments to prohibit the importation of these and other dangerous pesticides. And we are urging farmers to implement non-chemical pest control so that the food we eat can be grown and eaten safely. We need your help. For more information, contact Greenpeace at 1436 U Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009.